I just wanted to say a big thank you right up front, even before we get into today's show, just to all of you who sent feedback and put notes on social media and comments and ratings around the Leading on the Field sports leadership series of shows that we did, series of interviews. I think we all learned a lot from those conversations, and I'm just really grateful to these individuals who, you know, work under extreme pressure and scrutiny and hold essentially the expectations of a nation in their hands and in their hearts as they do their work. And I certainly personally learned a lot from those conversations, and I hope you did too. And if you did, I'm going to ask you again, please, this show is only as impactful as the number of people that it can reach. And if you have found it useful, if you have found it insightful, if you do find it interesting, it would really go a long way. It would make me most grateful if you could share it with your networks or with individuals that you work with, friends that could possibly benefit from it as well. Pop a rating on Apple Podcasts, whatever it might be. Every little bit helps, and I would certainly be most grateful if you could assist us with that. Hanging over today's show, though, is a sort of a burning platform question in the business world, an issue that, despite having decades to figure it out, is still a major problem, a major challenge for so many of my clients and for many of the clients I worked with in the past and many of the organizations I talk to today. And that is why, after having so much time to figure it out, are so many technology projects and programs in business doomed to fail? Why is digital transformation and digital integration still so often characterized by misaligned interpretations and expectations? Why is so much money spent with so little impact? And who are the organizations that are getting it right, and why and how? And my guests on the show today are Wayne Zwiers and Butlari Rekotso of Basalt. I've known Wayne for many years. We worked together at his previous employers, Aqua, and then Base2, where he was a partner in the business. He's now started Basalt as a fintech-focused development and software solutions business. They won Technology Company of the Year at Africa Tech Week in 2020, so they've clearly been making waves. They're doing something different in their ability to match client expectations with beautiful and effective delivery. They reached out to me a couple of months ago to say that they felt that they had something really relevant to share on the show. And considering the show is all about leadership, technology, and impact, I thought it would be ideal to speak to the two of them to understand what is it, what is the secret sauce that Basalt has uncovered that enables them, I guess, to do this work so effectively over and over again. And I really enjoyed our conversation. I hope you will too. And like I said before, if you are enjoying the One Eyed Man podcast, I'd be most grateful if you could share it with your friends and colleagues. Thanks again, guys, and I hope you enjoy the discussion. So, gents, thanks so much for joining me on another moody, cloudy Joburg morning, which is definitely not in the script. VT, I was wondering if I could maybe start with you. One of the things that stands out on your site, on the Basalt site, is a very deliberate focus on fintech and banking clients. Talk me through your decision to focus on that market, and was that an intentional thing, or has it been a sort of natural byproduct of the clients that you tend to partner with by default?
Thanks for having us, Mike. I think it's a little bit of both. Obviously, you know, when you start a business, you need to have a focus. And we thought there's a market for doing fintech right. I think in South Africa, our banks are fintechs. It means that the ground is ripe for us to, you know, to kind of work in that specific market. And I think that's why we've focused mainly on it. We don't have any problem working in any other industry, but we deliberately want to focus on financial services.
Yeah, I think that's a really great strategy, especially when your service offering is pretty broad. Wayne, you know, you've had experience working as an interface between clients and the developers and engineers behind the scenes that make, you know, clients' expectations possible for many years. Talk to me about how you're bringing some of those experiences into the cultural DNA of Basalt. There's the sense that you guys focus really strongly on partnership. What does that mean in reality? How does it come to life in your client relationships?
So it's an interesting question, and thank you. You know, what I've looked at previously, where we've had like almost what we call suits or client service people interfacing, mm-hmm. as you said, interfacing with clients. And the landscape's totally changed today. And what we have and pride and position ourselves is that our technologists, engineers actually communicate and work directly with our clients. And, you know, that's where the smarts and the intelligence is. So to have stuff in the middle and throwing things around and misinterpretation of ideas and technology, which is so complicated and complex at times, it's best to work directly. So that seems to be working really, really well for us. The trick then is making sure that we are hiring and onboarding the right individuals that have a personality as well as can communicate and code and develop at the same time. So very, very difficult to find that type of individual. But again, you know, there's some kind of introverted, but it's still be able to understand and communicate what they know very well. So we find that just works exceptionally well. And in the partnership space, it's really, you know, one team of how we collaborate and build together on what we want to achieve and have a shared vision.
It's a really interesting position because I think one of the mistakes that certainly digital agencies or agencies that had a strong marketing or advertising pedigree that progressed more into the digital space had this really unrealistic expectation of client service people needing to be business analysts. And it's a very specific skill. And obviously being agencies, we typically didn't equip those people to do that job. And then we were surprised when they failed. I think it's really interesting that you brought that relationship between the, let's call it the technologist or engineer, directly into the conversation with the client. And I'm sure that your engineers appreciate that immediacy as well. I do want to talk to you a lot about talent and a lot about recruitment and a lot about how you find the right types of people to do that work. But, you know, this topic of digital transformation and, you know, using software in innovative new ways to solve both employee and customer problems has been a big part of the conversation that you and I have had with our clients over the last two decades, I guess. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you've seen service providers make? I mean, you've alluded to one already, but other service providers make that you guys, VT, are doing differently from the ground up, you know, in the way you deliver services?
So obviously being an engineer, I started straight out of varsity and, yeah. Worked in an agency and, you know, serviced a lot of clients. Yes. I think, you know, when I was starting out, I was very naive, right? I only cared about the technology and as an engineer, yeah. you know, you want to work on greenfields projects, you want to work on the latest technology, and you don't really focus more on the business value that you're delivering. As long as your code compiles, you're kind of happy. But as I was growing in my career, I started realizing that there's a gap between the delivery team most of the times and the business that is actually selling the products that you produce. And so I looked a lot into, you know, things like agility in corporate spaces. And you start to notice a trend. You look at things like SAFe, scalable, agile for enterprises, and mm-hmm. you look at that as an attempt to solve the issues that they have with delivery. You look at the bloat that you have in teams. Sometimes you find a team of 20 people delivering something that could be done by 5 people. And the reason for that is because corporates add more and more people to projects in an attempt to bridge that gap between engineers and business. So, you know, with our business, with what Wayne said, saying that, you know, getting the engineers as very close to business as possible and being intentional in our hiring, making sure that we're hiring people with personality, people who are very comfortable discussing the ideas and sometimes disagreeing with clients. I think that has helped us a lot and has revealed to us that maybe the existing models for agencies don't work. And there are a lot of reasons for that, one of them being a times and materials business. As long as that's how you make your buck, what you're going to do is you're going to try and maximize the amount of hours so you thrive in chaos. And yeah. So if that's how you make your money, there's almost no incentive for you to correct it. But, you know, with Persolve being a vision-led business, you know, we're not led by a profit, and not saying that profit is not important, but, you know, that's not our core. We are people before code, so we're always seeking out opportunities to make sure that we actually service our clients by having, you know, much smaller teams, having more senior, you know, people in the projects, and making sure that, you know, we try to bridge that communication gap between, you know, business and the delivery team.
So I'd love to hear more about that purpose-led orientation of yours. Wayne, you know, you over the years would have heard a lot of clients expecting nothing short of wizardry from technology and engineering teams, whether they're internal or external. And I suppose you would have worked with many engineers and technologists, like, you know, like VT pointed out when, you know, in the early part of his career was just wanted to build great stuff and just wanted to express his skills and his creativity, which is perfectly understandable. It seems to me that one of the gaps between what clients want and what we can do from an engineering perspective is an issue of literacy. There is a lack of, you know, and this is a generalization, but in my experience, there was often a lack of business and value literacy on the side of the engineering teams. And there was a lack of technological understanding and appreciation on the client side. And very often part of the job of the agency or service provider was education and translation between those two worlds. Do you find that that's still a very big part of your work, or do you think that clients have become more technologically capable and literate, and that engineers have discovered that they need to contextualize their talent in terms of business value to be able to do their work better?
So what's interesting is I did a dipstick with one of our clients on a really well-organized team that delivers exceptionally well and fast. And what was interesting there was we said, what is the most important thing, or what do you think is the most important thing to the clients? And they said, the tech stack that we're working on and the smart technology and how we've structured the architecture and how it's built. And then we said the same thing question to the client, you know, what do you think is important to you as a client in terms of the product that we're busy building? And they're saying, we don't actually care about the technology. It's important. It's not important to us. We just want to know like how fast we can actually deliver and that the quality is of the highest standard. So already there's an example of totally a one team working exceptionally well together, but the output expectations is so different. So where one's focusing on pushing the best tech, the other's just saying, well, you know, average tech would get it done quickly and amazingly and with the highest quality, that'll sort that out. So it's having these relationships and connecting those dots. I think historically and even today, like technology is a hot potato. You know, it's complex. It's you know, not everyone gets it. And even, you know, how the more you get to know, the more there is still to know. So there's an insecurity around understanding it and pretending one understands what it is and what the tech is. But I think it's really just having the openness and honesty around, you know, there's experts that are in here to do what they do and do it exceptionally well. Trust in that and let them deliver. The trick then is obviously making sure that whoever's working on the technology is not a big black hole that no one gets to understand or no one is communicated correctly. So at Basalt, we also pride ourselves in, you know, bringing the issues to the front line. These are the challenges. This is where we are. This is a mess. This is doing well. So that, you know, everyone has trust and on the same page with what the product is or business we're trying to build.
Yeah, and sort of further to that, Wayne, I mean, a lot of being able to pull that off is not just bringing issues to the forefront or expressing very clearly the expectations or deliverables that clients, both clients and engineers have, but also knowing what to say no to. How do you think about which projects to take on and not to take on? And, you know, somebody once said to me, you're defined by what you turn down, not what you take on. How do you evaluate the possibilities of a project together? And what types of projects do you end up turning down in your experience?
So I think that it's never easy to know from the offset, but also sometimes you can work that out quite quickly or in first couple of weeks as just not aligned in culture or values or shared purpose. I actually got some actuaries in Australia to do a client selection modeling where we could actually input data and say, well, this is a good client or not, based on many criteria. So is it a vertical we're working on? Do we have experience in this sector? Do we have to relearn who the customer's audiences or the segments are? Is this client aligned to our value system? So there's a whole bunch of criteria. It's very academic in that sense, but really, you know, we've had experiences of working in with the same client/brand, but different departments where it's just chalk and cheese. But you know, it's again the personalities of the individuals, how they manage their teams, our teams, And again, it's people. We're working in with people. So there's going to be complexities and variables around different individuals that come in together, you know. So, but I think what's important for us is, you know, I've come to realize that having a highly skilled senior team in technology that is arrogant and knows it all and all that doesn't deliver as fast as a team that is, you know, pretty average maybe, but the team dynamics is just phenomenal. So they're sharing, there's learning, there's growing. You know, the velocity in terms of the delivery with that team is far, far outweighs the other. So, you know, it's different clients. It's, you see a trend on how these things work or pan out.
If this is your first time listening to The One-Eyed Man and you're wondering what I'm trying to achieve here, why don't you take a moment to go back to the trailer episode at the beginning of season one. It's really short, I promise, and will give you some insight and context. If you're enjoying the show, please consider sharing this episode or the One-Eyed Man channel with, well, all of your friends in the entire world. And now, back to the show. VT, this notion of digital transformation, which I speak about quite a lot and have tried, you know, through the medium of both research and then developing new models and new conversations, tried to define better. But there's a sense that it's used as a sort of catch-all term for kind of everything. all the new things that we're interested in as a business get lumped into the digital transformation phrase. How do you think about digital technology and software as specifically as a transformative force? You speak a lot about the transformational power of technology on your website. How do you think about that? Is that a cultural thing? Is it an economic thing? Is it a very practical thing? What does that word mean to you in context of the work that you do?
It's a very nuanced type of thing. I mean, we've seen people and even our government fall into traps of things like, you know, talking about the fourth industrial revolution, you know, and just like slapping 4IR on everything, regardless of what it means. Now, recently I was looking into what the Daily Maverick have done, right, where they spoke about under investing in technology. Which I found quite interesting, and I think it's important for businesses to understand the business they're in first before trying to see how technology works. If you look at the startup landscape in South Africa, you have a bunch of people with ideas around apps they want to build, right? And when you start to ask what's the business case, what problem are you solving, and all of that, a lot of people kind of like have a blank stare. They don't have an answer. They just saw someone in Silicon Valley create an app, and they think that's where you start, and then you figure it out. The kind of build it and there will come kind of mentality, but we think of it a bit differently this side. You know, Wayne is always saying that, you know, we're not here to just try to build technology for technology's sake, but we have a unique opportunity to leverage technology to solve real problems. So when you look at a country like South Africa, where you have like a problem with with crime, you have a problem with education, you have a problem with hunger. We start to look at how can we leverage the technology that we have to make sure we solve those problems. And when you start to look at it that way, then it's not about looking at the shiniest newest piece of technology that's available, but looking more at what's relevant to try and combat the problem that we have right now. Because when you have a business that's just jumping into inappropriately applying technology to a problem, you run into cases like we have right now with misinformation, right? Where news corporations have ended up having this clickbaity kind of articles on platforms like Twitter just because they want to be first. So I think digital transformation is about kind of first looking at the problem and also determining whether technology is an appropriate solution to the problem. And sometimes it's not like a fully fledged technological solution that you need. Sometimes it's a technology is a subset to, you know, delivering the solution. It's that. I think digital transformation is about making sure that we leverage the technology that we have access to solve very real problems.
your USP as a business, I guess, your differentiator is the talent you have, just like any people-oriented business. And I mean, I know running a business that offered both creative and technological solutions that often demand far exceeds supply, not just in volume, but in quality as well. And there's such enormous pressure on the talent pipeline to get the right people into opportunities so that they can gain experience quickly and be deployed into what is a space ripe for development and growth. As you rightly point out, software provides us with this opportunity to really change some fundamental issues and reorient economic possibilities in new ways. Wayne, you know, we've spoken briefly about the importance of having, you know, really high quality individuals in front of clients, but also the importance of culture and purpose in attracting that talent. There's also, you know, it would be remiss of us not to mention that in South Africa specifically, a lot of really talented technologists get snatched up pretty quickly into the corporate space. And that's not a bad thing at all. It's great for them, but it can be quite difficult for service providers like yourself. Talk to me a little bit about your talent strategy as a business and some of the challenges that you've had to overcome over the last couple of years.
Yeah, so, you know, I think it starts off with, you know, the culture of the company, which is like exceptionally critical and one of the things I focus heavily on, if that is one of the main things I can focus on, because that's the kind of glue and the dynamic that brings the team together in order to have that happy sandbox or sandpit to all express and do the good work that we do. So, you know, in all the learnings in the past, you know, when even interviewing or meeting people for the first time, it's, you know, it's not asking the kind of common interviewing questions around skills, expertise. You know, for me, I don't even look at the CVs because it's not what you've done. It's what you're actually going to do in the business and move forward into. So it's almost like your data set of what you've done. But now, you know, what can you use in that to move forward? And that's the questions I like to ask. Also to understand, like, does that individual's core values and purpose align to mine and that of the company? And being, you know, having a purpose drive that runs the culture, maybe that the market doesn't see or it's not clear to the market, but in terms of the team's culture, it's very clear. So once the person's values align to ours, it makes it a hell of a lot easier for that person and everyone else. And, you know, I've always believed you can't employ someone to be more creative, more positive, more passionate. When the values and purpose are aligned, that is a natural path that everyone follows. So that has really been exceptionally important for us. And then obviously there's a talent drain globally on technological skills. So, you know, what are those things that motivate people to be in a company as us, as Basalt? And a lot of it is around, you know, working on smart solutions, being able to explore, fail fast. You know, it's kind of cliche, and like building things to break things to learning and coming together again, you know, because it's unknown territory in the future and exploring those solutions. So, yeah, those are kind of a couple of principles that we have in place and things that we do for our talent and put together. And also, no egos, no attitude, no hierarchy. No one is less or more important than anyone else in the company. We all work together and we're only as good as we are together. You know, this example of like an intern is not naive or stupid in a sense as to that they don't know what they're doing. They just lack experience. How do we build and use that? And, you know, from the intern, the younger generations moving through the business, there's some great learnings and insights. And also like how fast younger individuals can pick up technology and stacks and learn multi-stacks like over a weekend even in times. Where you've got specialized in individuals who have been in this for 20, 30 years, but just, you know, can't pick up a new language that quickly or understand like why we need to adapt so fast. You know, that was the language you learned and that's what we're going to do and deliver. So great refreshing stuff that comes out of that too, which is so appreciated.
VT, a lot of your job is keeping those technology teams aligned and motivated and awake. I've worked with developers before. You guys are a different species, man. How do you, you know, if you're speaking to somebody who's really talented in the industry and reaches out to you and says, why would I consider shifting and coming to work with you guys? What sorts of conversations do you have with them and how do you describe how you are different as an organization to them?
It's quite interesting because I always think back to why I joined the business, right?
Yeah.
So obviously I met with Wayne once when he tried to get me into the business. He heard about me from someone. I met him for coffee. I said to him, our values are aligned, right? I feel like you're the kind of person that I've known my whole life, but I'm not ready to join your business. And when
I'm happy to date, but I don't want to get married.
Exactly. And you know, as soon as my circumstances changed, I gave him a call, and I think it took all of 5 minutes for us to decide that we're going to work together. So I always draw on that when talking to other developers. I think the phrase I maybe abuse is that we're going to create an environment where you can be the engineer that you've always wanted to be, right? And that's a very bold promise. We try to keep to it as much as possible. So you find some people who are like myself. They talk quite a lot and are very eager to always be standing in front of like a suit and talking about like business and the strategy and whatnot. But you also find the hyper talented developers who want to sit in a corner and just write the code, but like provide a lot of value in that space. So what I do on a daily basis is try to figure out how to make sure that every developer in the business is comfortable in the role that they're playing while, of course, delivering value. A lot of businesses, especially agencies, don't really care much about your career aspirations. It's about where I need to place you for me to make the most amount of money, right? So you find people who are like very comfortable consulting, but you also find people who want to work more on product. So we have a long-term plan to provide that for everyone. Some people are more than happy to work very long hours. Some people want to stick to the 8 hours. So we try to make sure that we provide an environment that is suited for the individual. Also, you know, as the head of technology in the business, most people will think I make all the decisions in terms of technology. But I draw a lot on the talent that we have in the business. I often, you know, set up like one-on-ones with developers in the business and try to find out what tech are they playing with, where do they think it would be most suited, what kind of project would they like to work on. And I've seen that, you know, having those discussions make it very easy for us when having conversations with potential clients to say, oh, actually, you know what, I just spoke to one developer last week who was speaking about how exciting Python is for data science, or how exciting a language like GoLang could be for kind of modernizing the banking sector. So it's always that, right? An environment where you're not going to be met with ego, where your ideas are welcome, where we're always going to be very open and honest, and really just make decisions based on data and the merit of the ideas, as opposed to I'm the boss, so you have to do what I say. And I think a lot of developers really want that. I know I wanted that. I wanted a space where I felt important. I wanted a space where, there was some psychological safety as well. So I could try something and fail.
Yes.
And then not have that be the end of the world or the end of my career.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that's so important. And I think, your point around being the head of technology, the CTO, the leader, doesn't necessarily mean you have to be the expert in all of those stacks, all of those approaches, all of those strategies. It's about surrounding yourself with the right type of talent and then amplifying their ability to do so. I think that's really wise, and not everybody thinks that way. So that's a credit to your leadership chops. Wayne, if we look back on the last year and a half, it's obviously been an incredibly disruptive and difficult time for a lot of small businesses, a lot of medium-sized businesses. I don't think we can call you guys a small business anymore. What are some of the lessons you and your team have learned that have maybe been surprising over the last year or so, and how do you think it will change the way you guys work moving forwards?
So, yeah, it's been so much reflection, which actually makes it such a beautiful place to be, especially with the kind of challenges everyone has experienced. But it probably needed a bit of a shift and a shake up to get to that point.
Yeah.
You know, one of the most interesting is we're always saying adaptability, agility, changing, moving faster, quicker. And it was always, you know, we'll try on a topic of a theme and, you know, within 24 hours, 48 hours, big corporations were actually able to adapt and change. So it wasn't that no one could. It just was, you know, what was the reason really? And there was no, like, drive as such. So that was a great experience for us to see, like, overnight, everyone can be remote. Corporations can be remote. Let's fast-track policies. Let's look at how do we circumnavigate through compliance and governance to do this. So, you know, one needs to realize there's always excuses, but the reality is we can do these things, which was quite good. The other thing was that, you know, a culture and individuals learning so much about people as well. So from home to, you know, people are people. We're not, you know, where we go to work and we're a different persona. We actually still are the same individuals and we get to learn about who has dogs, who has children, and people bring and staff bringing their kids onto calls, and we just become a lot more real with each other, which was so fun and great to see. Then, you know, like everyone had different challenges. No one wasn't a blanket approach. Someone might have children and trying to do homeschooling at the same time, but they were no less or more important to someone who was actually on their own for 3 months, not seeing another human being, working 12 hours a day or 8 hours a day because they just needed to fill their time with something. And then, you know, like there were stages where we thought maybe we need to bring like a psychologist in to see, you know, how everyone's doing and that. And what I actually just did was have a half an hour with every single employee and just, you know, how you're doing emotionally, physically, mentally, where you act, and open on this conversation saying, you know, I too have challenges. These are my challenges. This is where I'm feeling. You know, I'm a bit nervous of this, unsure of that.
Yeah.
And we didn't need professionals. We just needed to have good conversations with people. And that went so far, and it was amazing. And then, you know, we had meetings without agendas. So every end of the week, Fridays, we were like, you know, there's no agenda. Let's just all chat and catch up. How's everyone doing? How's the week's been? So, yeah, really, like, great stuff in terms of that, which we'd never normally have experienced. It would have been very transactional, you know, go home, go to work, do your thing, go home, we got to work. So I really appreciated that. But not saying it was easy. So, you know, to keep people motivated and the company culture going when there's so much external and still going into this year. So, but again, a lot of this based on principles. When, you know, it was a Sunday night, I had a with the whole company, and we didn't know, we were just going into the first lockdown. I said, you know, that in order to get this right, we need to make sure that we over communicate because we're not seeing each other. We need to respect each other because we don't know what everyone else is experiencing. And we need to be patient because, you know, someone might not be able to join on the call and have challenges. It doesn't mean we get frustrated and cross with each other. Let's just be calm and be patient around that. And it worked for us for last year, and it was something to be proud of.
Yeah, I mean, guys, I have a sincere appreciation for the challenge of starting new businesses. And if that wasn't hard enough, then starting a new business in the technology space where there is a shortage of talent and all sorts of complexities, some of which we've spoken about, to navigate. But then to do all of that in the midst of COVID is and to still do well, to grow, to be winning awards. You guys are clearly doing something right. There's something in your recipe that is producing the right outcomes. And just want to encourage you guys. It sounds like from a culture perspective, you have people aligned around purpose, which is always a big challenge. VT, I'm sure there'll be people, you know, listening to the show who would love to connect or reach out or find out more information about you guys. Where's the best place to find you and to have conversations with you?
So that's crazy because of an effort I've taken this year where, you know, in December I deleted my Instagram account. So I'm off Facebook, I'm off Instagram, and about 3 weeks ago I deleted Twitter off my phone with the intention of only using it on my computer. And I've realized that just has like led me to a place where I'm not very active on social media anymore.
I'm sure you're happier though.
I'm much happier. I'm finding more I'm finding more time for family And I'm realizing that at some point I was neglecting people, especially, you know, my wife and my daughter. But with that said, I do find time to check my emails. So, you know, people can email me at vt@basalt.co. I also, you know, periodically check my LinkedIn account. So that's just my first name. So Butlari Rekozo. So I think you can put it on the show notes for people to find me. And sure, also, we'll look, I do try to go on Twitter as well to just check if someone is trying to interact with me. So that's VT_codes. So yeah, I think, look, I'm more than happy to chat to people. Most of the people that I speak to on a regular basis, like, just give me a call. I'm not gonna announce my phone number here, but you know, if people reach out to me through the platforms of, you know, I've mentioned, I'm more than happy, you know, to give them my number and for us to chat further. Look, I'm really passionate about, you know, about helping people just beyond just joining our business. There are a few people, you know, with startups in the country that I, you know, I have like standing meetings with to try and help in terms of, you know, what I learn, you know, in a very formal way, and to see how they can apply that in the, you know, in the small businesses to, you know, almost guarantee better chances of success.
Great. Wayne, I assume you're on wayne@basalt.co?
Yep, that's correct. Cool. Or LinkedIn's also another great way to catch up. Or you can phone our landline. I'm joking.
Yeah. Smoke signals.
Yeah, exactly that.
So, guys, it's been a great pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for taking time out of what I'm sure is a very busy schedule at the moment. And yeah, I look forward to see what you'll achieve in 2021 and the years ahead.
Amazing, Mark. Thank you. And thank you for having us on your show.
You've been listening to the One-Eyed Man podcast. I'm Mike Stopforth, an entrepreneur, writer, and public speaker, deeply curious about discovering better ways to lead and better ways to live in an increasingly complex world. I find the best source of these ideas is the experience and wisdom of interesting people who are taking unconventional approaches to solving the world's most compelling problems. If you'd like to hear from someone I haven't yet spoken to, visit mikestopforth.com. Click on the podcast link and send through your suggestions. A big thanks to the Solid Gold Podcast Studios in Johannesburg, South Africa, for making this production possible. And remember, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man/person is king.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.